absence in those circumstances. And then the court says, the seeming alacrity with which legal practitioners bring or threaten, there's that word, okay. So legal practitioners bring or threaten to bring recusal applications is cause for concern. The recusal of a presiding officer, whether it be a magistrate or a judge, should not become standard equipment in litigants' arsenal, but it should be exercised for its true intended objective, which is to secure a fair trial in the interests of justice in order to maintain both the integrity of the courts and the position they ought to hold in the minds of the people whom they serve. Very important. So it's the integrity of this process in the minds of the South African public out there that we must preserve. So your recusal is not something between you and me. It's something that we must do to secure a fair process and justice and integrity in the minds of those who are watching us. So I think we have demonstrated that we have abided by that rule. Either bringing or threatening of this application was done as when the situation is what I've described happened. So the judges foresaw that. Actually, on a lighter note, it's laughable that people think that if a legal practitioner assume that issues a threat of something, steps that might be taken, that is something that if you did that, there would be no lawyers in this country, because we every day write what we call threatening letters, which says that if you don't do this, we will take you to court or we'll meet in court and all sorts of sometimes empty threats like that. So that's what the judge said about the so-called threats. And then at 85, we say the following pronouncement by Chief Justice Ngcobo, who was sitting in the Constitutional Court, is relevant both the chairperson but more directly to Honorable Mileham, demonstrate that to continue to sit under the circumstances it would be a breach of the Constitution. In other words, both on your part and that of Honorable Mileham, to sit any further in this process would be a breach of the Constitution. And sorry, can you please put up page 22? That mountain, what is there?
Okay, they have a practical problem for now, which is technical.
Okay,
for,
that's fine. No, then I'll read it out to save time. Thank you. Okay. That all right. Continue. The quotation, this one comes from the Constitutional Court, and that is the case of Bernard B.E.R. ENRT versus APSA. It's a decision of Chief Justice Ngcobo in the Constitutional Court. He said, and I quote, the apprehension of bias may arise from the association or interest that the judicial officer, let me pause there as well. I don't want anyone to tell me that you are a chairperson and not a judicial chairperson or whatever, or a judicial officer. You must, all this must be read with what we lawyers call mutatis mutandis, with the necessary adjustments. So if I say judicial officer, I mean any presiding person in a position such as yours. Yeah. So it is the apprehension of bias may arise from the association or interest that the judicial officer has in one of the litigants or in the outcome of the case. That obviously applies to Honorable Mileham. Or it may also arise from conduct or utterances by a judicial officer or a chairperson prior to or during the proceedings. That one applies to you, chairperson. The first sentence applies to more to Honorable Mylam. The second one applies to both Honorable Mylam and to you, because it refers to the conduct and utterances which you made about the incompetence of the public protector prior to or during the proceedings. Says in all these situations, a judicial officer or chairperson must ordinarily recuse himself or herself. The apprehension of bias principle reflects the fundamental principles that the courts must be independent and impartial. And we've already explained why this committee also has to be impartial, but not be independent, even though it should be. But we understand the differences. But it must certainly be fair and impartial and not suffer from any defect that affects the rule against bias. Then say, in this regard, it may be added that enmity and hostility towards a party also constitute sufficient reason for recusal. Where the presiding officer has communication with either party in the absence of the other in relation to issues directly affecting that other party, this also constitutes a good ground for recusal. I've spoken about that. Whereas in the present case, the presiding officer has had inadmissible evidence and is unable to disabuse his mind of the effect of what was heard, he or she ought should be whenever ought to recuse himself or herself. 89, we say, in contrast to the televised conduct of Honorable Chanchi and Milam, the proprietor, Mr. Milam would be the tweeter, the proprietor of a party's legal representative's motives in bringing a recusal application or other objections should not be lightly questioned. The gratuitous suggestion of misconduct on the part of such representatives, and that was by you on Newsroom, at least the one that I saw, didn't see the other one, is a ground for recusal by its maker. And then we referred there to a statement which was made by Judge Kotze in State versus BAM. That was a judgment which agreed with another judgment. And if you forgive me, Chair, I won't abuse the platform. I'll read from the actual law report because it gives context a lot more than what I've put there. This is what the two judges said there before I come to that part. It says, the magistrate's statement that the accused reflected on his integrity in making an application for recusal is unfortunate. I can find no ground for concluding that the accused impugned the integrity of the magistrate. He did no more than to invoke in his favor the rule basic to our system of jurisprudence that justice must not only be done, but should manifestly be seen to be done. Likewise, the magistrate, if he submitted to the application, would have acted in recognition of the rule without conceding any preparedness on his part to conduct an unjust trial. Let me just pause there. So if you recuse yourself, Chairperson, it doesn't mean that you agree, as I say, subjectively, that you are biased. It doesn't. I can give you an example, Chair. It's a pity I should have thought about that to include in this package. Last year, we had a case of a case that involved Mr. Ramaphosa. We were claiming on behalf of the Marikana miners. You might have seen this. It was in the public domain. Civil damages against him. And it turned out that the judge, I don't have to mention his name, the judge had shares in Lonmin or Sibanye, the company that we were suing. So the respondents were, the defendants were Mr. Ramaphosa and that company. The judge, unlike Mr. Milham, disclosed that to us the day before the case and said, I hold shares in this company. What do you say about it? We then applied for his recusal. And he recused himself. And in granting that judgment, Chair, he said the following. I hold these shares. There are not even many. I think there were 200,000 or whatever, which for some people is not a lot of money. And it was not going to affect my judgment in this case, but I agree with the miners, the workers, that I cannot sit in this case because a reasonable person would think that I'm going to find in such a way that to protect my investment. So here was a judge, and we couldn't question his integrity, who said, I'm not biased, actually, but I'm recusing myself because I'm not concealing with the workers. If he submitted to the application of recusal, he would have acted in recognition of the rule person without conceding any preparedness on his part to conduct to protect my investment. And then says the magistrate regrettably showed unnecessary sensitivity in dealing with the application. And then comes the part that I've quoted there, which says on page 23, it should always be borne in mind that an accused or his representative who finds it necessary to apply for the recusal of a judicial officer or chairperson is confronted with an unenviable task, and the propriety of his motives should not be lightly questioned. The proceedings in the magistrate's court were then set aside on the basis that the magistrate did not recuse himself, even though he should have, just on the reasonable apprehension basis. What does that mean here, Chair? It means that if you don't recuse yourself in the face of such blatant grounds, we run the risk of this entire exercise going on for many more months, and but it being a waste of time because it will be set aside if it is found that you should have recused yourself or that Mr. Milham should have recused himself. And then lastly, we say another crucial dilemma is usually whether to bring the application as soon as possible or to wait until an adverse outcome is made before raising the issue of recusal. Small pause. Their chair is a difficult one, I can tell you that. If it is found because that the issue again is accused yourself.
We can just let this happen and you come with your outcome, it doesn't matter what it is, and then we take it to court.
And it's found that you should have recused yourself. Or we can bring it now, which is better for everyone to save money and to save all time and so on. And we say the better view was articulated by the Constitutional Court as follows, and I quote Justice Ngcobo again. It is not in the interest of justice to permit a litigant, where that litigant has knowledge of all the facts upon which the recusal is sought, to wait until an adverse judgment before raising the issue of recusal. Litigation must be brought to finality and as speedily as possible. It is undesirable to cause parties to litigation to live with the uncertainty that after the outcome of the case is known, there's a possibility that litigation may be commenced afresh because a late application for recusal, which should have been brought earlier, to do otherwise would undermine the administration of justice. What that means in simple English, or as it applies here, is that if there's a possibility that the non-recusal might cause the starting of the proceedings afresh of this committee, then it would obviously be foolhardy to wait for the outcome and then start again in 2023 or once that issue has been. So it is our duty, professional duty, to bring this as soon as it becomes, as I say, untenable to proceed without having brought the application. Otherwise, we can be criticized if we bring it after the outcome. Two things happen. One, you can be criticized rightly because you're bringing it too late. But secondly, you can also be criticized because people will say, oh, well, you are a sore loser. It's because there's an outcome that doesn't favor you. And now you're bringing this application. You should have brought it earlier. But we bring the application now, not because we are very confident that there's no case to answer for the public protector in these proceedings, but it is incumbent upon us to bring it now so that we don't waste everybody else's time. Then finally, it's important to know that the High Court will intervene in unfinished proceedings if grave injustice would otherwise result or where justice may not be obtained by any other alternative means. In other words, having done everything, the recusal not be forthcoming, it is only at that stage that we have to bring it to you. We couldn't, for example, just go to court and say the chairperson did not allow us a postponement and so on.
we have a duty to bring it to you so that you make a decision as one way or the other. Chairperson, I won't read those closing remarks because it's you've already given me an indulgence. So simply to say that the grounds that we have raised, you would agree, are quite grave. And as I keep on saying, each one of them would be sufficient to justify the recusal of yourself and Honorable Milham. And we implore you in the exercise of your duty, because, Chair, we know that you understand this, so don't think we're not patronizing you, that you are sitting there not as yourself, as a person. You're sitting there in an institutional capacity, representing an institution, representing Parliament, having been mandated to do so by the structures that be. And to that extent, we also plan to send this application to the Speaker of Parliament for noting. So we just wanted to put it on record here, so that if and when the outcome comes, it would have been embraced, hopefully, by all the relevant parties. This is not something we're doing lightly, Chairperson. It is not something that is personally directed at you or even Honorable Milham, but it is our right to protect the interests and rights of the public protector, of Advocate Mkhwebane in particular, as a person. And on those grounds, then, Chairperson, we request that you return an outcome, you or whoever has to make that decision, return an outcome for the recusal of yourself and Honorable Milham on the grounds that we've set. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. The time now is exactly 1 o'clock. So you would have been given this marathon time from 17 minutes past 10. I am going to ask that colleagues will break for lunch back at 2. We're going to get into a process of clarities when we come back, and thereafter it will be a committee process. But let's break for lunch. Thank you.
Recording stopped. submissions made. I do not wish to engage on the merits of the application for recusal, but I do think where it directly touches on us, it's important that we place what our views are on that on record. And so I want to start, and it mostly relates to the fourth ground of recusal, in particular the aspect that speaks to what is referred to as the chairperson's unwarranted proximity to collusion with the evidence leaders. Because if he is colluding, then the party with whom they are accused to be colluding is similarly accused to be colluding. And this is set out in paragraph B4 and from paragraph 33 onwards of the recusal grounds. Now, the literal ordinary Collins dictionary meaning of the word collusion is that it is a secret or illegal cooperation or secret cooperation for an illegal or dishonest purpose. The legal definition of collusion from Black's Law Dictionary is that it is a deceitful agreement or compact between two or more persons for the one party to bring an action against the other for some evil purpose as to defraud a third party of his right. What is of concern is the prospect of collusion in a sense attributed thereto. And I'm going to refer to two cases. One is a Kalua's judgment, which is quite an old case, which is referred to subsequently in Sieven versus Sieven and Ward, which states, in our law, ordinarily speaking, collusion is akin to connivance and means an agreement or mutual understanding between the parties that the one shall commit or pretend to commit an act in order that the other may obtain a remedy at law as for a real injury. And the second is in Kuhn versus Karp, which says, in my view, collusion consists in our law in an agreement between the parties to a suit to suppress facts or to put false evidence before the court or to manufacture evidence in order to make it appear to the court that one of the parties has a cause of action or ground of defense, which in fact it has not. And so it is of concern to us that that allegation is made in relation to us. So the evidence leaders wish to place on the record that at no stage have they engaged in such an enterprise with the chair of the committee. And the allegations are unfounded. No evidence is placed whatsoever to support allegations of this nature. And we turn briefly to deal with the allegations to the extent it relates to us and what is alleged we have done with reference to paragraph 33 of the recusal grounds. Firstly, paragraph 33.1. The contents of this paragraph are with respect not correct. To the extent that they relate to the allegations of sexual harassment in relation to the evidence of Mr. Ndawu, the manner of how we anticipated dealing with this was discussed, and we made our position quite clear to the PP's legal team up front to seek a close hearing in which I actually said to the committee, Advocate Mpofu was not going to object to. And in this close hearing, the PP's legal team would then seek to ask any questions relating thereto if they wished, and to the best of my recollection, the approach was not objected to. Given the nature of the allegations and that the witness had not been found guilty of anything, we were of the view that both his rights to privacy and dignity and those of his family did not warrant, in the event those allegations were going to be examined to impugn his credibility, should be done in the public domain. It did not relate to relevance at all in the manner the decision was taken. But it is not clear why this is now a matter in relation to which the evidence leaders and the chair is said to have colluded, when ultimately in terms of the National Assembly rules, it was a decision to be taken by the committee and not the chair. And hence, the proceedings was convened for the committee to consider whether those closed hearings where a closed hearing had to take place for purposes of that part of the evidence. There is no basis to attribute collusion to the evidence leaders in relation thereto. As far as paragraph 33.2 is concerned, This is not correct. The evidence leaders have been subjected to time frames in the leading of their evidence. The record will show that the chair has held the evidence leaders strictly to the time allocated to them, save in a few exceptional circumstances. We respect those parameters. And for the most part, the evidence leaders have managed to plan their evidence and to lead the witnesses in compliance with the times allocated to them. This too, the record will show. The fact that the evidence leaders have managed to comply with the times allocated to them is hardly a basis to accuse us of collusion with the chair. The evidence of Mr. Sotoli was different for reasons which I articulated at the time. The questions posed arose as a consequence of a cross-examination wherein Mr. Sotoli agreed with propositions put to him which materially contradicted propositions which had been put to him in direct evidence, and in respect of which we regarded it as an obligation to explore certain evidence before the inquiry. But for the numerous interruptions and objections, in my assessment, it would have taken us about an hour to complete the process which we sought to undertake. But again, whichever view one sought to adopt, it does not come close to collusion. With respect to paragraph 33.3, we're not sure we understand the nature of the complaint. To the extent that it may be suggested that the chairperson has made decisions on the evidence leader's written inputs, this is denied. The chair has had no input in respect of any of the affidavits that have been filed before this committee. There is no evidence placed to support the assertion in paragraph 33.3 that we can meaningfully address in this process beyond the bald allegation. In paragraph 33.4, the allegations made in this paragraph about the evidence leaders is similarly without basis. Ultimately, there is a five-prong framework which governs this process. It starts with the Constitution, the Powers and Privileges Act, the National Assembly rules, the terms of reference, and the directives. We are appointed pursuant to the terms of reference. They say the following. I'm going to specifically refer you to Clause 4 and Clause 9. The inquiry is inquisitorial in nature, and the evidence leader does not act as a prosecutor. The role of the evidence leader is limited to presenting the evidence and putting questions to the PP or other witnesses, with the aim of empowering the committee to assess the merits of the evidence in line with its mandate. That we regard to be our primary purpose, to empower the committee to assess the merits of the evidence in line with its mandate. The format for question, whether oral or by way of statement with a view to limiting issues in dispute, will be determined by the evidence leaders in consultation with the chairperson. Clause 9 says, an external evidence leader, other experts as may be determined by a committee and a dedicated team of officials, including committee secretaries and assistants, researchers, content advisors, and legal advisors, will support the committee under the direction of the chairperson. Now, let me say this. This is the third time I've had the task of being an evidence leader. And the interactions with the chair in the context of this inquiry is in no material respect different to the interactions I've had in previous experience of leading evidence. As the evidence leaders, we regularly interact with the chair directly, but mostly through the secretary and Ms. Ibrahim, the legal advisor who advises the chair and the committee, who is apprised at all material times as to what passes between us and the PP's legal team. In fact, she's on the WhatsApp group with us. We regularly discuss issues as to the numbers of witnesses to be called, what is limited, the availability of the PP's team, witnesses, the logistics. There's nothing sinister about these discussions. Particular reference was made to a letter of the chair, which is said to either have been written or heavily influenced by the evidence leaders. I'm presuming it is the 3.5-page letter sent by the chair on 12 September, because I've searched and I can't find a 5-page letter. This letter was written at the time when Ms. Ibrahim was on sick leave. I, at the time, informed Advocate Mpofu thereof. In her absence, the evidence leaders was consulted by another member of the parliamentary team. I provided the WhatsApps that had passed. I apprised him of the factual position was and what had transpired in dealing with the response to the request of the PP's legal team for postponement. Yes, I was asked for input and on what had transpired, and I gave it. Advocate Mpofu will be aware that I had liaised with him telephonically both that Saturday morning. There was a WhatsApp exchange between us that Sunday. Only we would have had knowledge of it. There was no way they could deal with application for a postponement without knowing what had actually transpired between us. That would have been foolhardy not to ask me. And this was provided to the substitute legal advisors. In fact, I asked the secretariat during the proceedings on 13 September for a finalized version of the letter. Without further detail, we find the accusations of collusion against the evidence leaders to be unfounded. And in the absence of details of our conduct, which is alleged to have been collusive beyond what I can address or what necessitates censor, we can't take it any further than what I've now taken it. But there's three further aspects that has arisen during oral submissions today that I must deal with. We provided the witness list before these proceedings, which did not reflect any witnesses giving oral evidence in relation to Busasa. We didn't plan on leading any witnesses in relation to the Busasa matter, even prior to Advocate Mpofu having raised the issue of a subpoena. We similarly didn't plan, when we were planning it, to raise any witnesses in respect of what is encapsulated in the section dealing with charge 4. And I'll tell you now for a moment why. As evidence leaders, we didn't approach the litigants in the APSA case. We didn't approach the litigants in the DA case, the CASAC case. In the Baloyi matter, it was an exception because she had been the CAO during the proceedings. In support, the actual motion reads as follows. In support of charge 4, I rely on the evidence submitted in support of charges 1, 2, and 3, the affidavit of Mr. Samuel, the notice of motion and affidavits in the matter of Pasani Baloyi, which you're all familiar with, and number 4, the court papers in the matter of the President of the Republic of South Africa versus the public prosecutor and others in the Gauteng division, and the court papers in the public prosecutor V. Gordam and others in the constitutional court case. So, as far as we're concerned, the directives permitted, the evidence that we will deal with and we will attend to before this committee will relate to the court papers. We have no intention of calling witnesses relating to any of the cases in that regard. So this brings us to the question of Johan van Lochenberg and Ivan Pillay. Now, we have repeatedly said that this is a novel process, but it's still a parliamentary process that had to comply with the parliamentary rules. And pursuant to that, it had gone out as part of a public process, asking the public to make submissions. In response to that, Mr. van Lochenberg and Mr. Pillay filed affidavits. They submitted affidavits as part of the public process, seeking to give evidence before the inquiry, and on an assessment of the affidavits provided during that process, we recommended that they be invited to give evidence. In our assessment, the issues that had been raised in the affidavits in the public participation process, to the extent they bore relevance to the motion, could not be ignored. So that is the context in which Mr. Pillay and Mr. van Lochenberg had come to give evidence before this inquiry. And it had never been our position that we were going to call any of the litigants involved in any of the cases for purposes of giving evidence. Our approach has not been informed to the extent that there's been an innuendo based on the public protector's stance relating to the subpoena. That brings us to two further and last points. Our appointment may have been announced in March due to prior court commitments on my part and the delays in the provision of the record. We were only able to really work from May on substantive issues. And frankly, it's a daunting task. We started very much on the back foot. Part of, I think, what led to our choice was because we'd probably not been involved in public protector matters before this. So we don't have Advocate Mpofu's extensive knowledge that he regularly tells us about. And we were not familiar with the record, a record which the public protector's team would have been familiar with, having made representations to the independent panel. So what we have produced before this committee is the work product of essentially 2 months' work and a system in which we have had to draft affidavits whilst leading other witnesses for affidavits. So we want to disabuse any perception that's been created that we have had months to work on what we've provided to this committee. And I raise this not because I don't have an understanding for what Advocate Mpofu is asking, but to put into context how the evidence leaders have gone about this. I have no disillusion. I agree with Advocate Mpofu that time is required for doing the affidavits. That's not an issue between us. But let me place this on record. I don't enter into gentlemen's agreements as a matter of principle for obvious reasons. But I do enter into agreements with my colleagues as a matter of integrity. The word gentleman doesn't sit quite right with me. So to the extent that there's an acknowledgement that time is required, that is accepted. I don't think there's an issue about that. And the chair has told us, go and sort this out in the back room between you. But the issue is not so much about what time is required that concerned me in some way and us. It's the notion of a last witness and the closing of a case. If it was up to us, our last witness would be the public protector, to whom a number of questions arising from the oral evidence and the affidavits filed in a number of the court proceedings would be put to her so that she can put her version before the committee. But because she seeks to place other evidence before the committee, the process runs in such a way that that evidence would be led before we are able to put those questions to the public protector. You will, and that in itself may want to give rise for us saying to the committee, and we acknowledge that we would need to apply to do so if any witness needs to be recalled or any witness that is not on our list needs to give evidence. In fact, I had indicated to Advocate Mpofu that there may well be one or two witnesses, depending on the evidence that comes out, that we may want to call. So one of the things that happened during the evidence of Mr. Van Lachenberg is the Advocate Mpofu placed on the record that they would potentially call the investigators. Now, involved in the Gurdam investigation, particularly in relation to the subpoena. And if he doesn't lead that evidence and we regard it as material that evidence be put before the committee, then we may well have to put an application before the committee to do so. But that bridge will come to whenever we come to it. So that time that is required by the public protector for purposes of doing affidavits, let's assume, for instance, this application for recusal goes to the committee and it takes 3 months to determine and it comes back 3 months later. I would have thought that 3 months would have been an opportunity for the public protector's team to get the evidence together. So let's assume we come back and we then lead Mr. Van der Merwe. What I'm concerned about is then saying, well, we stop at that point and we then have to break because evidence then needs to be required. So I think in not firmly indicating to the public protector's team as to what time is required really depends on what happens after today. From our part, we've not reneged on anything, but we must be guided by the way forward. When we initially had this conversation, we looked at very different time frames to what we're looking at now. We had a block session in October to which the committee was readily available for the public protector to lead evidence. I'm under no illusion that that's unlikely now to be able to be utilized, but it does mean that depending on where we are in a court calendar, other commitments, etc., we would have to go back to a backroom negotiation with the public protector's team on that. And finally, it comes to the allegation that we had put false information before the committee in relation to the question of legal fees. The evidence was led because in our assessment, it linked directly to Clause 11 of the motion. We note that orally it was said that Senego received only about, I think Advocate Mpofu said between 27 to 29 million. In the written submissions, it said under 40 million, of which only 10 million less VAT had been received directly. Let me say this. The amount that I indicated during oral submissions of 49 million was provided by the Public Protector's Office. And I recall indicating that when I reflected that 148 million was the cost of legal fees. And I've said this even when we led the evidence on labor costs, that that includes labor fees, costs, court orders, cost on litigation, and that one needed to dissect that amount in order to ascertain precisely how it was spent to make sense as to whether it was a reasonable sum or not. And that evidence hasn't yet been led. And finally, there seemed to be some suggestion that on the basis of evidence that had been put up by the evidence leaders, it had resulted in a fraud transaction. Nothing that, to my recollection, that had been put up reflected bank details from Senego. The letterheads are publicly available on court papers, case lines, many other papers. I am also informed on what had now occurred, having ascertained it, and I'm advised that it was a bank confirmation letter received from an employee at Senego's email address. It did not relate to a letterhead from Senego that may have emanated from this inquiry. It does beg the question as to how anyone watching these proceedings would have known that there was a payment coming to Senego. But that's not my problem. That's the problem for whoever's investigating that. I simply want to say that to the extent that there's any inference that anything we have evidence leaders have put up has led to fraud, we strongly reject that. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Any issues, Advocate Mayosi, covered? Thank you. Honorable members, your clarities. Honorable Zungula.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a clarity for now. I'm still coming to the clarity. However, I wanted to raise two things, Chairperson. The first one is the number of people or the members of this committee that are not presently in attendance. You'll note, Chair, that you have a lot of members who were previously engaged in the proceedings from the Good Party, UDM, Freedom Front Plus, EFF, which are not here. Now, this process, in my view, Chair, is very important, which requires, firstly, a multi-party contribution coming from the different parties. Therefore, the fact that we are going to proceed in the absence of such members who play a critical role in this process, I think, Chair, that is not something we should do. We should rather wait, because if you check the people that are in attendance in this meeting, largely from two parties, the ANC and the DA, and Parliament has got 14 parties in total. Now, if there's only going to be two parties that are engaged in this process, the process of the recusal, I think Chair would not be doing justice on the matter. That is the first point. So I wanted to move, Chair, hopefully we'll get your ruling that for the benefit of fairness, for the benefit of having an inclusive process, let's suspend proceedings for this particular issue up until those members are back. That is the first thing. The second thing, Chair, I wanted you to have a view on is that you are presiding over a recusal application of yourself. Does it make sense that you preside over something that is about you? I have no doubt that there'll never be fairness, there'll never be impartiality on such an incident. I know some judges do that, but I don't think, Chair, it would be wise for you to preside over a process that is for the recusal of yourself. So those were the only two issues before Chair. Then should you rule otherwise, then I'll have no other option but to actually raise the other issues, the clarity seeking questions. But for now, I wanted to raise those two issues, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zungula. Honorable Dlakote.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Advocate Mkhwebane and your legal team and our evidence leaders, my colleagues. Honorable Chair, let me start by correcting something here, which is also raised by my colleague, Honorable Zungula. Just to put on record that in this meeting is not the ANC and the DA only. He's a member of the ATM. He's not a member of the ANC or the ADA. We have members of the PAC, members of the ACDP, and members of the AIC and IFP. So those are the members of the parties which are represented in this meeting. I'll also go to the rule book, which is our guiding document, rule number 161, concerning meetings of committees. Committees, I'll quote 161, subsection 1 and 2, Honorable Chair. Committees meet whenever necessary and as determined in accordance with these rules and the decisions, directives, and guidelines of the program committee in accordance with Rule 210. Then sub 2, a meeting of a committee may be called in terms of sub rule 1 by 1, the chairperson of the committee, 2, or by the resolution of the National Assembly. Then, we don't have a rule, Honorable Chairperson, that says that because the other parties or some parties are not part of the meeting, then a meeting cannot sit. We don't have such a rule. Then, 2, Honorable Chairperson, Rule 162 says that it's only a quorum that is required for a committee meeting to sit. So if we have a quorum, then a committee, any committee of parliament can sit. So I thought I didn't want to go through Rule 162, 1 up to 3, just to save time. So now coming to the matter before us, Honorable Chairperson, we are noting the seriousness of this application as a committee. We would therefore request that as a committee, we be given enough time to process, to go and look into this matter. We cannot come up with a decision today as this committee because of the seriousness of this matter with regard to what Advocate Mpofu raised in the application. We don't take it lightly. So we need as a committee to apply our minds so that when we arrived at a decision, it wouldn't be seen as if that decision is biased or anyhow, with the assistance of court, of course, of the legal unit of parliament. So that would be my submission, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Dlakote, for that contribution. Honorable Lothric.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will also confine myself now to the matter raised by the Honourable Zungula and also concur with what Honourable Lakude has said, and perhaps just add the following, Chairperson, that I think we have to understand that what we are busy with here is Parliament's work. And we are here to represent the people, but for Parliament's work. So if it should happen that there are some overseas trips on study tours, which I presume I could be corrected, I stand corrected in this, is not a formal parliamentary trip, then Parliament's work gets precedence. And therefore, parties have the responsibility in terms of their leaders and whips to ensure that they do have representation. So if there is another member of a party, then that person should be present, should be taking notes. And Chairperson, quite frankly, it has happened regularly that members who travel overseas and have important parliamentary work can connect online. So I think the whole notion that work should stop because a number of members are on some study tour, which I'm not aware of what it is and whether it has been sanctioned by Parliament or parliamentary work, we cannot see to such a request that the committee's work now just stops. Thank you. That's all I want to say at this point, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Lotrit, Honourable Van Meenen.
Thank you, Chair. Mine's a point of clarity. Do you want me to raise it now or do you want to resolve this issue first?
No, you raise it.
Okay, thanks very much. It pertains to B9, the ninth ground, the refusal to postpone on 13 September 2012, availability of legal representatives. If I remember correctly, the issue was raised after 9 o'clock in the morning. And the reason that is relevant, if I remember correctly, sorry, let me just get myself where you can see me, is that the application had already been lodged with the High Court. It wasn't that the honorable representatives weren't available. It was that the fact that they had been working all night and therefore were very tired. I just want clarity on that, if I remember that correctly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Van Meenen. Hope that will be clarified. Honorable Mananisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me greet Advocate Mpofu and Advocate Bauer with their teams. Mine, Chair, it's firstly, let me start by saying I'm covered on two issues that Honorable Tlakut have clarified, the one of the quorum and as well the second one, that we would actually go and go through this particular application and then get some legal advices on the decision. However, one wants to perhaps suggest that can we be given some clarity with regards to B7 on witnesses that were that came before us, whom they are seen as if they are not actually relevant for this particular process. Perhaps if we can be given that particular list in terms of specifically who are those particular people who came before us and who are irrelevant. And Chairperson, one would want just to comment to say that this particular process from start, ke khomo ya moshate ka Setswana, ke wa gapa o molato wa ile sa o molato. So some of us have been noting this particular processes.
You can explain to the Chair and understand that.
No, it's Heritage Month.
Okay.
I cannot explain. Setswana se toliki. Yeah, you can Google. The nice thing is Google, it has translation. So you can Google and find out what is it that I'm talking about. However, one would want to say that at least I've been part of this particular process from where we started as the portfolio committee. And I agree with Advocate Dalimpofu to say that directives and the NA rules are our Bible. And I believe that in this particular committee, we've actually tried to, by all means, apply the Bible. However, one would want to, indicate to both of you as evidence leaders that you could have failed us and people who have interest in this particular matter as the community. You have failed us in a sense that I remember Honorable Seabi once indicated that you must have this back room so that we don't find ourselves where we are today. So it really shows that your back room was not effective as supposed to, and you didn't do what you were delegated to do. Hence, we are here. And it's so disappointing, Advocate Mpofu and Advocate Bauer, as you know, learned friends. It's so disappointing that we are here now dealing with recusal and other issues. And, Chairperson, one would want to affirm that throughout this particular process, the word of biasness, fairness has been, you know, part and parcel of our discussion. And one would say that you've been fair in this process, in a sense that there was a time where, as an individual, I felt that you are just making Advocate Mpofu abuse us, you know, repeatedly you're taking us back to other issues that he has elaborated on. So I think issue of fairness, it has been at play in this particular committee, and perhaps we need to do more as we will be continuing with this particular process. And that's what I just want to say. And Advocate Bauer, Advocate Mpofu, do the right thing. You are equal to the task. We cannot deal with this issue while we're supposed to be, you know, on the other stage of this particular process. It is the first time process in the country, and we know that we will always be, there would be trial and tested errors where some of you would do whatever that you never thought that you would do. And Chairperson, Advocate Dali, I thought you were going to indicate as well that there were times whereby in this particular platform you issue out threats, not warnings. You issue out threats in a sense that some of us, we felt that it's as if like there are other issues besides this issue with you and the Chairperson. So if one could take this particular document and, you know, change the sides upside down, there are so many things that one would say that Advocate Mpofu, with yourself, you need to even as well try to apply emotional intelligence, because there were times that you insulted other people here. That's what I can say for now. Or undermine them in terms of how you were talking, undermining, interjecting when people were on the ground, as like on the platform, you were interjecting, and the Chairperson would overrule over Honorable Mayhem.
Chairperson.
Ne? So,
I need protection, otherwise I'll protect myself.
No. Okay, I withdraw the word insult.
Thank you.
And I apologize.
Thank you, Chair.
Unconditionally so.
Okay, Honorable Member.
Sure. But please thank note you. That some of us, we felt that in this particular process, we have been undermined in terms of the language that you were using in this particular committee. So that's what I can say, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Manani. So, Honorable Seabi.
Oh, good as well.
Yeah, it's like a way, na. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so.
I see your hand, Lizongula. And Honorable Seabi.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And greetings to all in the house and on the platform. I'm a bit confused. Maybe it's because I didn't start with the meeting this morning, because I was in another meeting. Of course, it's something that I will present in our in-committee meeting. I thought there was a presentation by the public protector through her representative, and there was a clarity from the side of the evidence leader. That's why I wanted to support the submission by Honorable Deputy Chief Whip, that we had the two sides, and as a committee, we must sit and adjudicate on the matter considering the seriousness of the matter. But if we go, that's why I'm saying I'm confused. If we go into deliberations now, it confuses me. But at the same time, if we ask questions.
I had given an opportunity for clarities and questions. So you had liberty to ask questions or clarities from what would have been presented. The deliberations are going to come at another point, not today. So you are on point.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I'm a bit confused, because we may take it. It might mean Advocate Mpofu must come and present again. It might mean Advocate Bauer must come and present again. That's why I'm saying it for me, it creates a problem. I thought we would say we've listened to them. Then it must be an opportunity for committee to discuss what they've presented. And we have legal backing. They are here, they are listening. And where we need legal interpretations, we know we have that assistance. That's what I wanted to present, because if the Deputy Chief Whippers suggested, and I know there was a second man from Honorable from the DA, I thought that's the direction we can take, so that we don't go there, and otherwise we're going to fall in the Honorable Mananiso's trap as we move on.
Thank you, Honorable Siabi. Honorable Suela Zungula and Honorable Ngola.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to our evidence leaders, and then greetings to Advocate Mpofu and Advocate Mkwebana and my colleagues. Chair, I think the latter speaker has covered me. I want to support what Honorable... Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. I thought maybe there are only lips which are moving up and down. Chair, I think it's good to receive what has been presented by Advocate Mpofu and limit ourselves to discussions as the committee. We will be given an opportunity to go and look at it, and we also require assistance from other legal gurus, because indeed we don't want to fall into a trap. We are quiet all the time during these proceedings. Not that there are not issues which we are observing, but because we respect this process, we respect our legal gurus, and we want this process to unfold smoothly. Now, I want to support Honorable Lakuda to say that in terms of rules, we don't look at issues of political parties. I think we need to clarify this once and for all. We are a committee, not political parties. We are a committee of members of parliament which has been appointed to execute a responsibility under this section 194. So the issue of quorum is critical. If the quorum is there, we proceed with the business of the day. We won't wait, and we want to be mindful that we need to conclude this business according to the time frame which has been adopted by this committee in terms of the rules of the National Assembly. So I want to confine myself with those latter speakers that we received the presentation from Advocate Mpofu, and then we go and engage so that we are not being seen as if we are biased. So that's my submission, Chair. And then again, I will also request members to check Rule 210 of the National Assembly. What does it say? It will assist all of us here. Again, the issue of the chairperson chairing this meeting, the chairperson has not yet been dismissed. He's still the chairperson of this committee as appointed by the speaker. So he's still the chairperson. So the question of why is he chairing, I think, needs to be clarified. We are in a situation where we need to engage, but not that the chairperson has been found guilty or not. So I will pause here, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable Suella. Honorable Zungula? Honorable Zungula, you said you would raise clarities later.
Yeah, no, Chairperson, I would ask that you make a ruling first, because I raised an issue that I think requires a ruling from yourself. Once a ruling has been done, then we can proceed. I find it is going to be confusing and all over the place, Chairperson, if we are going to be dealing with many issues at once. The issues I was raising require a ruling so that we know that a decision has been made. This process, meaning the interaction based on the application by the public protector's legal representation, we are continuing with it. But if we are going to be speaking many things at once, we won't know whether we're coming or going. To put into context, Chairperson, the issues of the committees of parliament, they operate somewhat different from how this particular process is operating. Hence, you find that in a normal portfolio committee, there's going to be set members whereby the ANC will have 7 members, the DA 2 members or 3 members, the EFF 1, and the other so-called smaller parties will have 1 or 2 members. Whereas in this particular committee, that is not the approach. The approach here, as communicated by the speaker, was that all parties must be part of this process. And hence, I raised the issue that even in this particular meeting, there's only two parties that are participating, with the exception of myself from the ATM. It's only the ANC and the DA. That is why I was raising, in light of the manner in which this committee has been configured, it would be prudent to wait up until there is proper representation of the people who, firstly, were part of this process, and secondly, ensuring that all parties are represented in that meeting that will deal with the application. That is what I wanted to stress, Chairperson. The second issue is the issue that we are dealing with an application to recuse yourself as a chairperson. I do not think it is wise for you to preside over such. Perhaps you could search or get legal advice whether how should we proceed with this. But I do not think, Chairperson, it is wise for you to preside over a session or over an application that deals with you, your conduct as a chairperson. Zanga yenzeka naphi na. In fact, yenzeka kumuntu oyi-1 apha eSouth Africa, and nalapho it brought about consequences that can never be encouraged again. So ibiyiloo nto, Chairperson, that you must make a ruling. After you've made the ruling, then we'll know how to proceed. But without the ruling, Chairperson, kunzima for us, okanye for me, to actually proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Zungula. They are competing now. Each one of them wants to. And now I'm trying to assist Zungula first before I note both of you because I still have a member. A ruling will be made, Honorable Zungula, by the chair on the issue that you would have raised. Advocate Mpofu and Advocate Bauer.
We want to say the same thing that
I don't know how do you responding.
We've communicated telepathically across the room to say that we note the honourable members' concerns raised. It is a standard practice that when recusal applications are brought against a presiding officer, that presiding officer presides over that recusal application. It's commonplace. It happens all the time. And I think Advocate Mpofu and myself are in agreement that you should be the person that presides over it. We're hoping to to not waste further time on that aspect. We thought we would just place that on record.
Thank you, Honorable Bauer. African Mbofu?
Yes, Honorable Chair, yes, no, that is correct. I thought for the sake of progress, we were signaling that, yeah, on the first issue of the quorum and the peculiarities of this committee, I said even when I was addressing, it's your...
I will attend to
yes,
that.
It's your committee, Chair. But on the second issue, the Honorable Zungula is incorrect on the issue of who should chair this meeting, as Advocate Bauer has explained. So we thought for the sake of progress, maybe instead of taking it to the parliamentary legal people, at least if both of us are saying the same thing as Advocate Bauer is saying, then we can move away from that point. It is standard procedure that, in fact, in one of the extracts that I read out, it was actually put out that one of the awkward things about the accuser is that you have to raise it to the person, whether it's a judge or the chief justice or whoever, you have to raise it to the person so that that person, because that's why it's called recuse yourself. It's because you are being asked to recuse yourself from those proceedings.
Thank you.
Chair, can I? Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Through you, Chair, may I add something? Given the unusual nature of this process, it may be something that you take back to the committee, that it may well be that certain aspects is a committee decision, given the powers of Parliament and the way the committee is structured. I won't say anything further, but all we're limiting this to is the question of presiding.
Whether
the
decision
of recusal
is we have covered the point. Don't elaborate any further. Please switch off your mic as well. The point is covered. Thank you. Honorable Olanwala.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope I'm audible. We are mourning an untimely passing on of the electricity this side. Am I audible?
You are audible. Go ahead, Honorable Ngola, in your mourning.
Thank you very much, Chair. One, I think you have said, let us ask clarities from Advocate Mbofu in respect of the application and then get into the committee process. When you said get into the committee process, my understanding was that it is then therefore that we are going to entertain issues of whether we meet a quorum in terms of us to be eligible to take a decision in respect of this application, who is here, who is not here, and all that. The other aspect, Chair, which I think both Advocate Mbofu and Advocate Bauer have covered me on, is the issue of presider or not presider. I just wanted to make an example of a recent case of against Pastor Omotoso, where he made an application on against Judge Mandela Makaula, who actually presided over that particular application. So I don't understand where is this thing coming from, that there is one person and that there was a last in blessing, blah 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 blah. So it's completely not there. But then, Chair, of course, we're going to have time to deliberate to the contents of the application itself. The other issue, Chair, I wanted to raise, particularly raise my hand way before Advocate Mbofu delivered the application in the committee, is one that, Chair, I have seen that the public yesterday was already in discussion through social media and other platforms of the grounds that which Advocate Mbofu is making an application on. I do not think, Chair, necessarily that it could be a professional way of working, that an application is brought to us by Advocate Mbofu, but whoever was having an appetite did inform the public about it without it being entertained by this committee. I think every party in this inquiry, Chair, must exercise maximum professionalism is that we don't take to the public matters that have not yet been tabled before this committee. All of us, Chair, I want to plead with all of us that whatever documents that are shared to us as members, as evidence leaders, as the chair, as the secretariat, as the staff, as the Parliamentary Legal team, documents that are meant to be tabled before this committee should not be shared with the public until such time that this committee has made its determination in the contents of those particular applications or whatever form of document. I have one clarity, Chair, in respect of, because my understanding is that we are still in the stage of Advocate Mbofu delivering the application into the committee. So when we ask questions, he is still in the platform to clarify some of those questions. So we are in that stage. We have not passed that stage. We have not deliberated. We have not went to other issues. So my question is in respect of one aspect in the application, which speaks about the time frame between the last witness that is called by the evidence leaders and the first witness that would be called by the public protector, which in there is an issue about 1 day and 2 weeks proposal. What part of what I want to check, Chair, is that has there was even in the correspondences, there are a number of extensions on the submission of the list of witnesses of the public protector. Now, my first question would be that has there been a conclusive list agreed upon by parties of witnesses that ought to be brought by the public protector to the inquiry? And two, Chair, if you check the application, paragraph one speaks about the issues relative to the roles. But I want to single out the issue of the reasonable time frame. In that, how do we then balance what Advocate Mbofu calls the fairness of the time granted in between witnesses, which he says it's 2 weeks that they requested, and the actual reasonability of the time that we, Chair, we must proceed with the inquiry. The last issue, Chair, is that I want to second the proposal by Honorable Doris Dlakude that can the committee note the application by the public protector of recusal of the chairperson and Honorable Myla. Then the chairperson arranges as a legal opinion unto the matter from the Parliamentary Legal Services. And there is a backdoor, although Honorable Mananiso said it has collapsed, but there must be a backdoor arrangement that will determine the date at which the committee will actually deliberate solely on issues relating to the application for recusal. I wanted to second as well, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ola Ngola. Honorable Maneli.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Please, my apologies for not opening up the video. I've moved to a space, so I'm in transit to just get connection. I think for me, Chair, I will now confine myself now that the way forward is clear on how the matter will be handled post the item you are in. So I just want to confine myself on this just to help me have clarity at the time of deliberations that may not have the legal protector, the public protector's legal team. I just want to check, Chair, if I would have heard well, because you said that was a matter to come back to about members who are not present. And this was emanating from a presentation made by Advocate Mpofu, where he referred to those members specifically and the reasons thereof. Just to be sure that this was on the basis of information forwarded to him, even though we were not aware at the time. And if that is not the case, really a clarity of whether that would not constitute holding a brief for them, because we'd expect that to come through the administrative process. But as I say, it's really to understand it. Now, I'm linking it. This question is linked directly to what is in the also in the body of the application, where reference again is made to political parties that may agree and political parties that hold a different view, and link even the conduct in that regard. That again, just to check whether it is just a general point or whether he understands it maybe that for another view, it can also be construed as dividing the committee from those that he believes may be reasonable in his own way of looking at things and those that may really just be showing bias. Now this is important after the clarity about parties versus members of parliament represented in this committee. Because I think it's important that all the time we make the input, we also want to be sure that you are not prejudiced in approach. That before you even say something, because you are located in that group of parties that you perceived in a particular way, that your input may not even make sense in that score. It's important to clarify that. The last point, Chair, in the conclusions, and I want to just check if I heard him well on this part when he makes the conclusion, that indeed this is not a tactical issue of trying to avoid an outcome because there's no outcome. I think this is how he was putting it. However, the point he emphasized was that in any way the public protector has no case to answer, which I would believe purely from a point of representing the client. Even on that one, for me, the clarity I would need is whether he makes it as a general point on the basis that in any way as he came, he would have had that view. Or this is on the basis of having listened to evidence led and he would have come to that conclusion that it's not about what could be the judgment, but based on what he has gone through so far, the client or the public protector in this case has no case to answer. I just wanted to be sure, Chair, that I have heard these points well, because in absentia, I may not have the chance to clarify so that I change my notes if there's anything I did so right. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. The last member, Honorable Gondre.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have one question for...
Chair. It's me. Sorry, Chair. I hope Honorable Gondre doesn't take it personally. That,
just switch off your mic for now.
Yeah. No,
Advocate Mgof.
Yes, Chair. No, it's just a matter of clarity. Well, not even clarity. It's a request. But I'm subject to your ruling, Chair. There's quite a lot of number of issues that have been raised. Whether we can do this in two rounds so that I can deal with some of these and then, because otherwise,
she's the last one. So,
okay. Thank you, sir. Okay.
Honorable Gondre.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Kialiboga, Chairperson.
Your mic.
I just have one clarity seeking question around the application. Paragraph 81, Advocate Mpofu. You make reference to the DA attaching witness statements in the Section 194 Committee to Court Papers. And then you also talk about a confidential witness list, and you talk about potential witnesses. In the course of your submissions, you made reference to the fact that you had not consulted with some of the witnesses or something to that effect. So I'm also trying to get clarity, and I'm piggybacking on the question by Honorable Ngola around your witness list, because at this point, my assumption was that you should have already submitted your witness list. It should have been finalized. So have you consulted with your witnesses, or because you make reference to them as potential witnesses? So And then the confidential witness list, and I wanted clarity on why your witness list is confidential, because the assumption is that they would have to appear before the committee. And then you mentioned the fact that the DA attached a witness statements in section 194 to court papers. Are those statements, pertaining to your witnesses that you would like to call, for the public protector? So I just wanted clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gonde. At this stage, I'm going to invite you, Advocate Mpofu, to pick up on all the clarities that were sought in relation to the application. And thereafter, I will make a summary and a way forward.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with Honorable Gonde while it's still fresh, because I think has a quite easy issues to just get out of the way. Honorable Gonde, just a bit of background. The list that we submitted to the chair, I can't remember now when. We were given some deadline to provide a list of witnesses. And we provided it under the heading, the chair. If you remember, the chair announced here the day after we had provided that list. And he specifically called it a provisional witness list. And that was because that was the heading of the list that we gave him. And so that covers your first question, the explanation of why we called it a provisional list. Well, let me put it this way. The reason we called it a provisional list is because it was a mixture of all the witnesses that we intend to call. And so that would involve witnesses that we've consulted with and those that we have not consulted with, or those that we might have wanted to be subpoenaed, for example, because either they are not willing to come voluntarily. That's how a witness list gets compiled. When we got a list from the evidence leaders, it was the same. It was a list of all sorts of people. Some of them were called, others were not called, others were subpoenaed, others came voluntarily, and so on. So that's an answer to the first one, whether we've consulted with all the witnesses. The answer is that with some of them, but obviously not the unwilling ones, or those that we had not been able to reach at that stage. Yeah. But that's not even the problem, Honorable Gonde. The problem is not whether we've consulted or not consulted. It is the point we're really making is that the DA put in its papers that list. And that comes to your second question. Why is it confidential? It was wrong for the DA to do that, because that list is by its nature confidential. I explained it to you why the evidence leaders made a point of informing us that their list was confidential. And that's why we made sure it doesn't even reach. It could have been very juicy news if you saw some of the names there. But we honored that arrangement because it can drive witnesses away or just invade people's privacy unnecessarily, who may not even ever be called as witnesses. So that's why it's confidential. And as I have said, it has already happened to us. Some of the witnesses are already reticent, exactly because their names have been bandied about. Where we had provided them with a guarantee of confidentiality. You are obviously right that ultimately, if those people come to testify here, they're not going to testify in camera. They'll be sitting there. But that's a different issue. Once they're here, then obviously it would have meant that they have waived whatever confidentiality. But it's not fair for me to say in my list of Honorable Gonde, And it might turn out that you might want to change your mind, or you might never even be called, but you'll always be identified as that person who was once prepared to testify. Anyway, so that's why it's confidential. There was the issue of witness statements. No, the witness statements are not of our witnesses. Witness statements that were attached by the DA were the witness statements of the people that I mentioned. Ms. Mokhaladi, Muntsisi, Tejane, I can't remember the other one. Our objection there was simply that to put those statements in court papers is disingenuous. I mean, there's no other word for it. Because you put, let me give you an example. You'll put a statement, was it Baloyi? I'm not even sure, Ms. Baloyi, if her statement was there, but I'm just using it as an example. You remember one of the things we've been joking about it here was that she said the public protector wanted to be called madam or to be bowed down to. When a question was put to her, it was clear that is just an imagination kind of situation. So if you want to put that statement, then you have also to put that statement was since retracted, if it was retracted or qualified or whatever. You can't just put it in court papers before judges who don't know that this person actually retracted the statement or it was discredited by other witnesses. So that was the point we're making there. Okay. So it's wrong for the DA. Anyway, while I'm there, I might as well deal with one of the issues of Honorable Maneli, because it's related to that, as to why there were a reference to political parties. There is a reference to political parties because political parties are represented in this committee, as it was explained. I mean, we all know that people, we're not naive to think that people are just here, representing their jackets. They are here representing their political parties by design. Of course, honorable members have taken an oath of office to act as according to their conscience and so on. That principle was established in the case of the UDM, besides the national speaker, so-called secret ballot case. But you can't run away from the fact that people are here representing parties. That's why there's proportional representation. There's so many for the ANC, so many for the DA, so many for the EFF, so many for whatever party. It's political parties. It's not a secret. It's not some secret that we must whisper about. It's a fact. That's really the context in which it was raised. And then while we're with Honorable Maneli, whether it was a general point, okay, I've dealt with that. And dividing the committee, well, I have no interest in dividing the committee. It's true that the people are here representing political parties, or whether they come with mandates or not is not for me to say, but they represent their political parties. Holding a brief? No, I don't hold a brief for any political party or political parties. I speak to all members of political parties here, even here. Again, that's not a secret. I speak to them here in front of everyone. Some of them I've known for half of my life. Others I have, relationships that go beyond this. Some of them are even my clients. I don't hold a brief for them in this particular. I might hold brief for them in other court proceedings like I do for General Olomisa, for example. So I'm not going to stop talking to him about other matters that I'm involved in with him just because there's this committee. The point I was making there was not holding a brief or whatever. It was that the point that was raised was not so much the absence of members or the issue of a quorum. It was that there had been, and that's why I was raising with the chair, there had been a specific communication with the chair to the effect that there would be no sitting this week, and therefore some people were comfortable to go elsewhere. They might have chosen to stay here, maybe. I don't know. But we've already said that's a matter for the chair. Even when I raised it, I had said that I don't want to enter that space. But I don't want also to participate in a meeting that is not properly constituted, if it is not. If it is, it is. That's fine. But it's my duty as a professional to raise it with the chair. If there was, let's assume there was no quorum, for example, I would have said to the chair, have you noticed that there's no quorum? Otherwise, we'll all be sitting here wasting our time. Yeah. Okay. The fairness. Honorable Manelli, what I was saying about the fairness of the whether the public protector's view of the merits of the case, I was saying it in the following context. I was saying she does not believe, and neither do I, nor would any reasonable person believe that there's been anything that has been said here that constitutes an impeachable offense. So the point I was making is that if you wait, it's that dilemma that was referred to by Justice Ngob. So if you wait until the outcome, then you can run a process which might take months. Let's say it's a trial, months and months, and then at the end you ask for a recusal. That's one way of doing it. But that way is not recommended, because it would mean that you're just wasting time when waiting for the outcome. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that if you do that, you can also be accused, rightly or wrongly, that you are only doing it because the shoe is pinching, because you don't like the outcome of guilty or not guilty or whatever. And then suddenly you find all sorts of retrospective reasons why there should have been a recusal. So that's why the Constitutional Court says you must raise it as soon as it is, as soon as you have the reason. I think the court said, where the litigant has knowledge of all the facts upon which a recusal is sought, it is not in the interest of justice to wait until an adverse judgment before raising the issue of recusal. So that's obvious. So I was saying in this case, we don't even have to wait for a so-called adverse outcome, because if there's any justice, there'll be no adverse outcome. So, but we're still raising it now. And it was also in the context of turning this into the CCMA and having all sorts of witnesses who don't speak to the issues. But that's a debate for another day. Okay. Honorable Ngola, I agree with you 100%. It's not the first time that this is happening, that where there's a matter that's going to be raised in this committee, it should not play itself in the public domain. It's the same issue, the same complaint. You should at least accept that I agree with you, because that's the same complaint that we're leveling against the DA of putting in the public domain documents, which are, strictly speaking, only before this committee. We don't know why they did that. But we have no control over... We have no control over what members do with their own documents. If members decide to give documents on Twitter, or whoever they want to give it to, we have no control over that. I suspect even the chair doesn't have control of what members do with the documents which they get given legitimately, but might use for illegitimate purposes. It's just people's discipline that we can rely on. We can't say the chair must not give people documents, but we assume that everyone understands the protocols and so on. So it's regrettable that anybody, the only thing we did was to send the application to the chair, and I'm assuming the chair sent it to the members. What the members did with it is not, and our business, but I agree with you. The next issue is, this issue of the 2 weeks, I don't know why this is misunderstood. You know, the reason why I've been at pains to find words to even describe it is exactly what you're saying. There was no agreement in the true sense of the word. It was an understanding between us and the evident leaders and the chair. If it was an agreement, I would tell you. So I don't want to accuse people of things that are not there. It was not an agreement. It was an understanding. And Advocate Bauer is right. Even that understanding was not rigid or cast in stone on the 12 tables. It was a moving target. If the evidence led us in a particular way, that 2 weeks would also move. It's not like it was from this particular date to that date. But what I was just explaining, why there was that understanding, why we even made that request, whether it was accepted or not. And I've explained, I don't want to go into that as well, why we needed that period. Advocate Bauer is right. It's not a criticism of the evidence leaders, or I'm not saying that they had 100 months or whatever. I don't care whether they had a month or 2 months or whatever. I'm just saying anybody who's preparing to lead witnesses requires a period, whether it's 1 day or 2 hours or 2 minutes is irrelevant. It requires a period where you check the evidence of the other side, cross out certain witnesses that you might have thought you need and don't need, resequence your witnesses, reconsult if you need to reconsult on certain issues that might have arisen. For example, now we have two witnesses. One or two of those witnesses might say something that might either lead me to eliminate witnesses or to add witnesses, for example. I've said that the chair will tell you, I can't remember which witness it was, where I said, I'm going to give you these propositions. If you agree on these propositions, it might eliminate my cross-examination or even witnesses to call. Because why would I call someone if the evidence has been considered, for example? So it's that kind of management process. It happens in every situation where, particularly of this magnitude, where there are so many witnesses. If it's a big criminal trial, there'll be a kind of short break between the evidence of the prosecution with 100 witnesses and starting the other witnesses. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, that's why we wanted the period, and I was just saying it's unfair the way it had panned out. Yeah. Has there been a conclusive list of witnesses? That is Honorable Ngola. I've already answered that question when I was addressing Honorable Gondo's issues. The reasonableness of the time of the 2 week thing, again, I don't know what the reasonableness is. In my view, 2 weeks is reasonable. Maybe I need 3 weeks, maybe I need less or whatever. It's not written in any book. Yeah. It just depends on each particular process. So reasonableness can be judged by others. And this is the perspective that needs to be put there. The evidence leaders, when we had meetings with them, had informed us that they will finish, their last witness would be on the 26th of August. That did not happen. It's not their fault. The evidence just took us in that particular direction. Then they told us that they would finish on the 10th of, on Saturday, the 10th of September. That's the Saturday where we sat here. Also, that did not materialize because, as I say, you can't control these things. And that's why I was saying the 2 week thing was a moving target. Yeah. All we're asking is the same understanding from on our side that if things don't work out in the way that we might have predicted, there should be flexibility. So we can't say now the 26th August became the 10th of September and it became something else, but the date on which we have to start remains the same. I mean, that's just blatant unfairness. Because as that date moves, it then shrinks the period, the so-called break period. Yeah. Honorable Ngola, I'm sure it was a slip of the tongue, was referring us to a backdoor process. with the chair. We don't want a backdoor process with the chair. It's the back room. Yeah, we can go.
Yes,
go.
Yes, back room.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Nol. And Advocate Bauer and I will not participate in a backdoor process with the chairperson or anybody. Okay. So, all right. Now, on coming the last, I think, that covers those. The last, no, there were two. Honorable, I think, is it Van Minen? Yes. And you asked about the application, yes. No, the application for postponement was not because the legal representatives were tired. We wouldn't have known on Sunday already that we're going to be tired on Tuesday. We started on Sunday. I think I traced it on the day, but basically the timeline was this, honorable member. You'll remember that on Saturday we had, Ms. Tejane. We finished around about 6 p.m. When we finished, I said, I want to raise something for the record for the chair. And I said, we have just now been involved in this urgent application because the DA had served us papers the previous night. Unfortunately, I couldn't even, the reason I didn't sleep that night is because I had to deal with the DA application, which arrived around about 8 p.m. and prepare for the cross-examination on Saturday. So that's what I did. So when we finished the evidence of Mr. Jane, I then raised it because I didn't want members to be brought here the following Tuesday in vain. And I said, there's this possibility, but because it's late in the day, we'll deal with it in the back room, not the back door. So on Sunday, I then initiated the back room process by sending a WhatsApp to the evidence leaders. And I said, it was even before the president, I think, came into the picture. I said, look, it looks like we're going to be involved in this thing. It must have been after, because the president had already said that they wanted more time or whatever. Then the feedback I got from the evidence leaders, I can't remember now, was that, no, that was not acceptable to the chair. So that's why we then wrote a letter on the 12th, which was the Monday, to the chair to say, please, now we're formalizing the thing outside of the back room. Please, these are the developments. The chair wrote us back and said no. And that's why we sat on Tuesday, which is what we had been trying to avoid from Saturday. So when we sat on Tuesday, because we had no choice, we had to come here. We then said, this is the situation. We are now, everything that you must have heard, inundated. There are now almost two or three other parties more than Saturday. And on top of it, the public protector is not feeling well, which obviously, again, we wouldn't have known before that morning. And the rest, you know what happened there. So the thing about the 9 o'clock deadline was just something when the chair then asked me the minute details, now what are you actually going to do? It was raised in that context. So I was illustrating to him that actually, even now, as 9 o'clock when I came here, I had just met a deadline, so I would not have been able to prepare for the cross-examination of Mr. Jane, for example. So it was only in that context. But that was not the reason why we asked for the postponement. List of witnesses. No, I think that was your only issue. Am I right? Thanks. So sorry, miss my note. Yeah. No, I was mixing your issues with Honorable Mananis. Chairperson, I really take strong exception to what Honorable Mananis has done. Because, and I want to thank the Honorable Member who tried diplomatically to call her to order. To say we are now here, we're not in the deliberations. in your deliberations, you can do, you can insult me as much as you like. But it's not correct to use this platform now of Clarity Seek to say the things that are A, false and not true, and secondly, which will clearly have to be responded to by me. I don't want to enter that space. In actual fact, I know the member withdrew, and I accept that. But for her to have said that she was of the view that I abused them, whatever, and saying that I have insulted anyone, I've never insulted anybody here. Never. Not once. Otherwise, you must tell me who I insulted and what the insult was. Yeah. So instead of complaining about abuse, she was actually abusing me. And I don't take kindly to being abused, as you know. But I accept the withdrawal of those statements. Yeah. But insofar as the honorable member saying that we should do the right thing, I agree with her. I'm just simply saying the back room, it was not just myself and Advocate Bauer. It was myself and Advocate Bauer and the chairperson. So he must do the right thing as well. And at the moment, the right thing is the recusal application. So and I accept again the criticism that you give to us, at least my part of that criticism, where you're saying that it means the backroom failed. Obviously, if things were managed properly in the back room, as I've explained now to the honorable member. For example, the sitting last Tuesday should not have happened at all if the back room had happened the way it should have happened. We should not have sat here. There should not have been so-called threats or doctor's notes and all that. It should not have happened. I tried from Saturday to prevent that sitting from happening. Everybody who's honest knows that. I tried on Saturday, I tried on Sunday, I tried on Monday, I tried on Tuesday morning, as I've explained here, to say we should not even come here to sit. Even before I knew that the public protector was not well, even worse than the public protector fell ill. So if you want to blame me for that, I'll take the blame. But, I can't, unless if you wanted me to put guns on people's heads, then I'm not inclined to do. So that's really the what we tried to do. The public protector tried everything in her power to prevent this. But of course, we were blamed. We were the ones who should be lynched and burnt at stake. That's fine. Then the issue, okay, I think we will help the chair about that later. In as close to you, between a rock and a hard place in English. Yeah. But you, B7, oh, yes. Honorable Mananisha, you said you wanted a list of the witnesses who are not relevant. Yeah. We'll supply you that list. I don't know it offhand, but let me just give you an answer that might tease your mind. Yeah. I think it started with the witness, Neshunji, where before he testified, I made a presentation in the morning to say this witness is irrelevant for this and that reason. The chairperson made a ruling to say, I've already said, well, we'll deal with it when we deliberate, which is wrong. Well, there's nothing we could do. Again, we can't stop the chairperson from listening. Even when I was cross-examining that witness, I said, well, since you are here, I have to ask you some questions. That happened with the next witness. I can't remember now the proper sequence. I made the same objection. The chairperson overruled it. It happened again with the third witness. I made the same objection. The chairperson overruled it. Now, I might be many things, but I'm not mad. So I can't keep on saying the same thing for every witness. So after three witnesses, I gave up. So all the other witnesses were irrelevant. There was nothing because I knew what the outcome. I even told the chair, I know what the outcome is going to be, but I have to do it to discharge my duty. So there were countless other witnesses who came with irrelevant evidence, but there's nothing we could do. I've said that as closer to uMpambane ibonakala ngoba uphinde wenze the same thing so many times. Or uthathe iemery yokamanz kodwa uyayibona ukuba iyavuza. I think it was Einstein who said that madness is repeating the same thing that has failed. I'm not mad. So the we'll give you those witnesses, but I can tell you this much. There were 18 witnesses that were called by the, or that will have been called by the evidence leaders at the end of this. Only three of them, well, if you don't count the so-called expert, the two others, Mr. Van Lochenberg and Mr. Pillay, those are the only witnesses who were called here that were not employees of the Public Protector's Office. So the 15 witnesses are employees of the Public Protector's Office who are telling us about all their problems about this meeting and that meeting and what have you, you know. That's why I said this is being turned to the CCMA and or the Labor Desk of the Public Protector's Office. Maybe that's what this committee was supposed to be. But I would have thought those things can go to the National Assembly, not to this committee. But that's a story for another day. So of those 15, I think maybe half of them fall under that category. But we'll give you the list. We're totally irrelevant, completely. Yeah. Chair, I think that covers everything. Thank you, Chair. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, my Chair. The issues raised by the evidence leaders, I would have wanted to respond to them before the members actually spoke, but let me just quickly deal with, I don't know where I've made that note. Okay, I'll do it offhand. I've already explained that when I say the evidence leaders did this or did that, it's not necessarily a criticism of what they did. There are areas which may be properly construed as criticism. The recusal application is not aimed at the evidence leaders. The recusal application is aimed at the chair. So if the chair did something together with the evidence leaders, well, that's it's the chairperson's share of that conduct which we are interested in for now. So I think that is the spirit in which it should be it should be addressed. And I don't know about the dictionary meaning or here may not of collusion, but that's the spirit in which we meant it, that there were meetings which we regard as untoward in the sense that I've explained the sense. As this is mercifully not my first commission or process of this kind as well. So I know that evidence leaders and the chairperson have a different type of relationship. But that's why I qualified it. Was hoping to avoid this, to say that if there's a matter that is raised by us or that concerns the public protector, that matter we expect it to be debated with both sides, quote unquote. That's what happens in every commission that I've ever participated in. But it doesn't mean that every time the chairperson has to speak to the evidence leaders about this, that, or the other, or scheduling, we must be invited, as would happen if it was a court case. Because in a court case, a judge cannot even talk about those practical things with one person without the other one. Then this is not what I'm asking for. But, you know, so then there's the issue about Mr. Ndo. I can't believe my learned friend, Ms. Bauer, says that the issue of no was not about relevance at all. That's what she says. Well, that's just not true. The whole point of the objection to Mr. Ndo's alleged sexual harassment being raised or not raised was on the basis that it's not relevant because he didn't make allegations regarding HR issues. I'm just paraphrasing. And we accepted that. That's why in the end, we didn't even question Mr. Ndo on those issues. So it was all about relevance. So to say it was not about relevance at all, it's not the issue. It was exactly about that. And then to say it was a committee decision, not the chair's decision, just underscores our complaint. That's the point I was making, that when we made relevance issues, they were summarily dismissed by the chair without consulting anybody. But when the evidence leaders made a relevance-related issue, it was subjected to a committee process. That's the exact bias I'm talking about of treating us differently. So I can only say I agree. Evidence leaders have been held to their time safe, exceptional times. Again, I agree, but that's exactly the point I'm complaining about. It's not that evidence leaders have not been held to the times that were. It's just the evidence leaders have been allowed to choose how much time they need. If they say they want 3 hours, then they get 3 hours. The fact that they get held to the 3 hours doesn't detract from the point from the fact that it is their own self-imposed 3 hour duration. Whereas with us, the duration is then imposed on us, and we are also held to it. So on the holding, yes, it might be equal, but on who determines the that's where the bias is. Mr. Stolle, I don't want to get involved in this. Mr. Stolle was cross-examined wrongly and against the prescripts against the directives in particular. We all know it. The chair might not know it, but Advocate Bauer knows it. She knows exactly what cross-examination is. And Advocate Mayosi knows what cross-examination is. I know it. Mr. Stolle knows it. And that's what happened. In fact, Advocate Bauer says herself that Mr. Stolle contradicted himself. And he says she then had an obligation to explore. Well, if you are exploring, whatever you call it, a person who has contradicted themselves, that's called cross-examination. And it was wrong. And it's not true either that if there had been no interruptions, that 3 or 4 hour exercise would have taken 1 hour. I can put all every little cent I still have, having not been rewarded for my work, that if we played that tape, you'll find that the so-called interruptions did not even come up to half an hour. Yeah. So, but it's fine. It's a subjective view. It's just false. Yeah. Okay. In terms of reference, yes, thanks to my learned friend. When I mentioned the instruments, Chair, that govern the process, I had forgotten to mention the terms of reference. It is indeed the fifth instrument. And it does say that the evidence leaders should not be prosecutors. Yes. Yeah. I think I've covered all the. Oh, sorry.
Still getting more notes. I'm about to close.
I'm sorry, Chair. No, one second.
Yeah. Otherwise, those notes will never end.
They won't, yeah. No, Chair, this is the last one.
There'll be a lot of tweets coming.
Yeah, and no, thank God. I'm out of Twitter now since I was insulted there. No, that's a joke. I'm still there, Chair. But I just try to hold my peace. No, just one, Chair. Yeah, this is from Mr. Sena Sianejo. About the fraud. She said that the IT of Sianejo has confirmed that the email was fake. Generally, what happened is that whoever got to know that there was money that was supposed to be paid wrote an email pretending to be coming from Sianejo, saying that the money must be diverted to a particular account, and that was done. And because obviously, I think who can blame the thieves, but also the vigilance of the people who are in the public protector's office, because they should have spotted or called them, but they put the money in the wrong account. Incidentally, another client of Mr. Sianejo was also, they tried to dupe them. It's an NGO, not SOE, which I don't need to mention them by name. But they have better systems, so they called Mr. Sianejo, who told them not to pay the amount. And the point I was making there is not, I can't say I've got evidence that the thieves saw the thing here. I'm simply saying that by putting up irrelevant evidence here, that opened Sianejo, among others, to that kind of abuse by thieves. If you say to me, I must prove it, I'll say I can't. But I'm saying this is the reason why we were saying that irrelevant evidence must not be led, particularly when it involves people's firms or bank accounts and all that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you again for your patience, Chair.
Powerful, the time now is 15:49. And you would have started just 8 minutes after 3. Just indicating this is what I do all the time.
Well, Chair, you must do it
for
to
everybody.
No,
you everybody,
don't.
For everybody, including the members. So I'm indicating that sometimes facts matter than any other thing. And I believe in that. Thank you for that, Advocate Mpofu. Maybe just a couple of points to make from the chair. I think the first one will be to acknowledge and welcome the comprehensive application you would have made for the recusal of the chair as well as Honorable Milham. That's well received. Members would have asked clarities. As the chair, I don't have clarities. I think we are going to have our own time as a committee to deliberate on the application and definitely make a decision on the application. We're going to give ourselves time to do that, to apply our minds. So I want to thank you for that, and I would have been very patient to give you time to... It's not easy to give somebody 2 hours in that 2 hours. You are a reference point. It's an exercise. So I would have joked about Honorable Milam that you were mentioned only in 20 minutes and I could just see. It comes with the terrain for that. Thank you. Maybe just also so that a lot of things are clarified from here. I'm going to do this before I make my further points and ask Thembu Nkosi to put that on record and clarify for the purposes of today's meeting. Now, the committee that is the Section 194 is a history-making committee. It's the biggest committee of the National Assembly since 1994. There's never been such a big committee where every party is represented. There's 36 members in this committee, with the ANC having 19 of those, based on the confidence that that organization has from the electorate. Every other committee would have 11 members. And every other committee don't have every party in it. Other parties are not in some committees. But this is one committee where every party is involved. And the quorum of this committee and other committees is not on party line. So for this committee to proceed, you need a certain number. And every time we start our meeting, we don't start it without reaching that quorum. So when we start, we would have conferred, the two of us, that both physically here on, and the quorum is across parties. Well, if a 50% of 36 is 19, based on the strength of proportional representativity, sorry, I have to emphasize that point. It is. And six if it is 11. So as of today, and I'm going to ask him to do that because Honorable Melde might be in Denmark, but the Freedom Front Plus, the alternate was here, Honorable Dana, throughout the day. So I'm going to ask for him to quickly clarify, because after you spoke, Advocate Mpofu, in relation to that ground that related to the three parties you've mentioned under that ground, about two emails would have come. One from General Lolomisa, and you can indicate the time. Can you quickly do that?
Chair, you are exposing Temi Ngosi to a recusal application.
No. Unless you have you are intending to go there.
Thank you, Chairperson. The email of Honorable Lolomisa came at 10:43. That was about an hour and 40 minutes after the meeting had started. But safe to say, Chairperson, I've seen the trail of interaction between members where all the members, support staff and of this committee are copied to. But as the secretary, members are aware of the processes to follow in submitting an apology, and I have not received a formal apology from the three members. And just to elaborate, Chairperson, that as you had indicated, some political parties in the committee have full-time members and alternate members, where a full-time member is not present and an alternate member attend, and sometimes they attend both. So, Chair, as much as I have not also received any form of apology from Dr. Melda, Ms. Dana has been on the platform and she is still on the platform for the FF Plus. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe just to take the point further, I want to recognize the point that was raised by Honorable Heron the day he was sitting there and raising the meeting of today on the basis that he would be overseas. He would have wished that he be present, and the initial program would have had this week free. And again, I'm going to take you back to Honorable Milam at the very beginning. When we tabled and adopted the terms of reference, he had a problem with what we called a living document, a program that is dynamic, that is going to change all the time. He did not want us to use that language of a living document. So our program is a dynamic one. There are things that are beyond our control that are forcing us to have meetings sometimes that would not have planned. And I would have explained that to Honorable Heron when he was raising that concern to say there are things that went beyond our control, that we would have a meeting that we did not plan before. So that will be his concern. But I don't want to labor that point, because if we were to do that, because every meeting we go to where we deal with minutes, because it will open other doors. There are meetings that we go to where parties are just absent, including in this inquiry. And that is reflected in every minutes. So we take note of all of those kind of issues. The second point I want to deal with is, I think Honorable Ngola has raised this point as a concern. You have attempted to address it, Advocate Mpofu. I am in agreement with you on that issue, in that I might not have comprehended exactly his concern that he registered. Come again?
I'm not sure if they can hear us on the virtual platform.
Okay. Can you hear us, Honorable Ngola?
Yes, Chair, I can hear you.
Thank you. Because I'm invoking you, boys. I'm going to be talking about you.
No problem, Chair.
Because you have raised a critical point, which is going to be very difficult for us to implement. The one that says about the documentation. And I'm saying I might not have comprehended you very well in terms of the concern you're trying to address. Because what we do, once Thembi Nkosi sends out documents that the chair would have approved, we lose control of that as to who shares that with who. It gets to be out of our hand. I think Advocate Mpofu was trying to attend to that, because remember, we are operating in a transparent. So if we send a document tomorrow for a meeting of Friday, we expect that even the media and everybody else would have had access to that document, so that everybody else is ready for that. So it isn't the nature of this. And I'm saying this, making the point that I don't know whether that's what you were addressing, or you were addressing a different point altogether of a different nature other than what I'm referring to, as would be done by Thembi Nkosi as the committee secretary. Yeah. Just as a quick comment, I think both yourself, the team of the public protector, the legal team, as well as evidence leaders, you can continue doing what you are doing in terms of the back room. I was never part of the back room. You always met together, and I get the reports of those. Unless you are saying you need my assistance now, I'm available.
No, we'll need the assistance of the new chairperson.
You can't preempt things, Advocate Mpofu. So you do need the assistance of the chair. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Chair.
No, I will consider that.
Thank you.
And perhaps the next point that I just want to make, Thembi Nkosi would have sent out a program for a meeting today, as well as a meeting on Friday. And so the ruling that Honorable Zungola would have raised, because Honorable Dlamini made that proposal, this in-committee meeting of ours. And so that has been approved for us. We're going to have to utilize that day, which is Friday, as the committee, because we don't want to delay making a decision on these matters. It can't be prolonged. It will not be fair to the process, to how we want to run and speed up processes in this regard. So we will have that meeting, that committee meeting, that will attend to all of these issues that would have been placed here today. So I'm indicating to members that that will be our next meeting, as was proposed by Honorable Dlakude. And I'm happy that both yourself and Honorable Lothrit addressed the issue of member participation in committees and what becomes a priority at what point. So I don't want to be much longer unless there's something I'm missing. Fatima, anything missing? Okay. Honorable Ngola, you wanted to clarify that issue quickly?
No, Chair, I think you captured the point I wanted to make properly. And I think Advocate Mbofu as well did capture it properly in terms of the document that are meant for this committee and them being shared before they are actually tabled in this platform. But Chair, another issue that I wanted to just a plea to all members that can we please, all of us as members of this committee, try not to open a different inquiry through social media. Or rather, if it is possible that the whips of the political parties represented can talk about it. Because I remember we, the ANC complement, were told by the deputy chief whip, Honorable Dlakude, that no one is allowed to go and speak about the proceedings of this inquiry into social media, because the problem that we are doing is to
Imagepop, just hold it there, Honorable Mola. You're going to do that on Friday.
No problem.
Thank you very much. Honorable Siabi.
Thanks, Chair. And my apologies for coming at this stage. Maybe something I must also raise on Friday. As you decide on the meetings, especially those might be beyond our control, as you said, Chair, I think there's a need to consider certain things. For example, okay, wanted your attention. For example, in this committee, there are, in some instances, there will be a chairperson and a whip and other members of a portfolio committee. And if we allow many clashes, yes, there might be a quorum, but it disadvantages those who would not follow the proceedings at the end. I'm just saying, let's look at it. We may discuss it on Friday, or you may look at it at your own time in your office. So that we do, in the 19 of the ANC, for example, we also include substitutes in that 19. So if the 19 is, or part of the 19 is not there, you're not going to have another person representing there. So let's look at it so that we have, especially with portfolio committees in the mornings, if we can try to avoid, we may not avoid it completely, but if we can try to minimize those clashes. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Honorable Siabe. We'll continue to improve. You will realize that we would have started an almost meeting every day. And once other committees came back from recess, we had to readjust in the interest of other committees. But your caution is that even as we change times and dates, we must not lose sight of that so that we don't lose the consistency of members here because they have got other responsibilities. Their homework is taken care of. Thank you for that. Thank you, members, and thank you to everybody, colleagues. The meeting now is adjourned. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Chair.